On this episode of EFL Unfiltered, we meet a man whose love for the beautiful game knows no bounds, and after a lifetime of devotion to football, certainly has a tale to tell. It's the unmistakable Mr. Barry Fry. So, Barry, thank you so much for having us here. It's a glorious spring day.
You brought the sun with you.
Well, occasionally I can do that. I can't promise that every single time. Speaking of sunshine, it feels like it's been nothing but sunshine for you. 65 years in the game. 80 years old. I'm not throwing these numbers at you to make you feel old whatsoever, but is it a blink of an eye job, that young boy scoring at Wembley to the man that sits now here before me?
I've been so lucky. Ever since I left school, I've never worked a day in my life. I've been in football for 65 years, loved every minute, the good, the bad, the ugly, and I'm still going. Long may it continue.
Well, we'll come on to the details of the good, the bad and the ugly. Given what football's given you, and given your enthusiasm for it, I'm struggling to find someone that feels as passionately about football as you do. We all love the game. Yeah. It's all part of us. But it seems to be all-consuming for you. Where does it come from?
It comes from an early age, really, where, I've always wanted to be a footballer. And I was very fortunate as a schoolboy to be picked for England schoolboy 6 times, scored 5 goals. One of those goals was at Wembley in front of 95,000 people when we beat Scotland 5-3. David Pleat, Len Badger, Ronnie Harris played in that England.
George team. Graham was on the opposition side, wasn't he?
George and Bobby Moncur from Newcastle. They all went on to become great players, great managers. I went to become has been that never was. Unfortunately, as a player, 2 years at Man United as apprentice, 2 years as a pro. Then I went to Bolton, Luton, Orient. But unfortunately, in my early 20s, I got a dead leg that turned into a hematoma. So I had to have my leg cut and the blood ooze out. And I was on crutches for 4 months. 18 months later, the same thing happened on my other leg. Doctors advised me to pack up because if them...
Blood clot territory, isn't it? Yeah.
Travel and... You don't want to be told that when you're 22, you know, it broke me up really, but it just makes you more determined. So I never really had a career in playing. I was lucky enough to have a manager's job at 28 and at Dunstable, talking about playing at Wembley and starting your playing career in front of 95,000, joining Man United. When I went to Dunstable, they was bottom of the league for 8 years and my first crowd was 34. So time changed, but, you know, we finished bottom of the league again for the 9th time and I had to have a gimmick. So I asked my old mate George to come and guest for us in 2 pre-season friendlies. Bestie come and it was 10,000 in Creasy Park and 5,000 outside, couldn't get in. But he put me on the map, you know, because of the publicity we got. I managed to get hold of Jeff Astle, who'd retired from football at West Brom. He scored 34 goals for me that year. We got promotion. And Dunstable had arrived, but if it weren't for Bestie, he's played 6 times for me at various clubs, I wouldn't have got started. And I lasted 32 years in management. And I, like you, are absolutely amazed I last that long.
Not amazed. The respect that is across the game for Barry really does sum up your approach to it. I mean, you just casually thrown a name in there of George Best, but that time at Manchester United with the likes of George Best and Dennis Law. I mean, am I right in thinking that not necessarily George's babysitter for a bit when he comes over from Ireland, but kind of in charge of making him bed in and looking after him?
Well, yeah. So Matt Busby, the manager, called me. I'd been there a year and he called me in the office and he said, Barry, you're flash cockney. I went, thank you very much, boss.
Was that seen as a compliment or just a fact?
I live 60 miles from Cockneyland, so I just took it. It was the boss. Anyway, he said, I've got these 2 shy Belfast boys coming over, Eric McMordy and George Best, and I want you to look after Bestie. I went, no problem, boss. After 2 days, Bestie ran home, homesick, back to Belfast. But thank God he never held it against me, and he done me a million favours. Even when I was owner of Peterborough, he come and done a couple of after dinners for me. He guested for me at Vary, played in my testimonial. He's absolutely brilliant. And the thing was with George, I was on This Is Your Life with him in the green room, you know, as Michael Parkinson and Eamon Holmes and Matt, Paddy Creven and Dennis Law, all the Man United players, 15 Miss Worlds, of course. And I'm saying to Bestie, George, what the hell made you come to Dunstable and play for me then? He said, Baz, I'll never forget you. You used to buy all the comps of the apprentices because we was playing on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And I was going out with a girl whose dad was a massive Man United fan. And he used to buy all the tickets. So I used to give the lads the money that he gave me to buy the tickets. And I didn't know until he told me, he said, he used to send all his money home to his parents. So the only money he had to live in Manchester is what I give him in cash for his comps. But for a man to do what he done for me,
yeah,
top man.
Pays it back tenfold, top doesn't man. It? But it goes to show you meet people at formative times, not just in their careers, but in their lives, that they remember things like that. The other name that you mentioned there, which is one of the most iconic names in English football, of Sir Matt Busby, which, yes, we know what the incarnation latterly of Manchester United is off the back of Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
Sir Alex Ferguson, always talks about the influence that Matt Busby had. Oh. So what was he like? Is it, the man
he was
built
brilliant.
Manchester United.
Yeah, if he walked in the dressing room, he had this air about him, you know, and all that. And he used to believe in his players and just tell his players to go out and express themselves. And ever since I was a manager, that I just wanted to entertain. I wanted to, I told the lads, go and express yourself, you know, have confidence too. And over the years, we've been very, very successful. And it's all thanks to Sir Matt, really, because his philosophy worked for me. And I love entertaining the fans. I'm a fan at heart. So if my team or anybody's team that I'm supporting is entertaining me, I'm happy.
Could you get engaged in that as a manager? Because we'll come on to it in due course, because obviously there's tactics, there's ways of motivation, there's your approach to what management is. But given your love of the game, could you sit down there in the dugout and think, I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing here in the lab?
Yeah, no. Like I say, I'm a fan at heart and I reacted. If we scored a goal, yeah, I jumped up and run down the touchline and fell over and everybody laughed. But, you know, I'm just a fan. I'm celebrating. It's great. Upset some people, but there you go.
But you got to celebrate the good moments in the game.
Well, with VAR now, you're celebrating and then you're stopping for half an hour to wonder, well, is it a goal or not?
Work out whether you can celebrate again. So the fact that you are delivered the news at 22 that you can't live your dream out of becoming a consistent professional footballer and scaling the heights that you believe that you were very much in your own reach, weren't they, given what you'd seen as a younger player in yourself, does that then inform what comes next and this long managerial career? Because as one door shuts, devastatingly for you, another one needs to open, doesn't it?
To be fair, the advice I got from two doctors was, you've got to pack up the game up, because if blood clots travel to your heart, you're dead.
Yeah.
So it does frighten you. But I still continue playing part-time football at non-league level. But you only play it half-hearted.
Yeah.
But the doctors was right, because later on in life, I have had two heart attacks and things like that. Yeah. So there is something wrong with my blood. But when I was in Papworth and the London Heart Clinic, they sort of treated me. I didn't have to have an operation.
Right.
I've just been on tablets ever since, and I keep taking them because I'm still here.
I mean, and again, the wonderful thing whenever we've spoken and whenever I've seen you across the years is that lust for life, but the matter-of-fact way that you speak about quite big things. I mean, you just mentioned two heart attacks, which are frightening, which are potentially devastating.
Yeah.
What in those instances, because I know how much your family means to you, I know how much of a foundation they are for everything. Is that the other part of what drives you on? That need to be here to fit for, whether it's the fans, whether it's the club, more importantly, for your family?
Yeah, I've really done things I shouldn't have done in my career because I put my family at risk and I shouldn't have done that. But it was my love for football. And to be fair to my wife, who's put up with me for 46 years, a silly girl, she could have done a lot better than me. But thank God she ain't.
Your greatest signing is what you call your
She is. Because she believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. You know, you've got when you go home and had all the heartache of football and things like that, you need somebody to pick you up. And she certainly picked me up over the years, thank God.
You mentioned putting things at risk. I mean, we're sat here, obviously, now at London Road, and it's a beautiful day. There's no pressure on us. We're sat relaxing and enjoying a chat, hopefully. But you must have been sat in one of these seats here with what felt like the weight of the world on your shoulders at times, given what you've done at this football club. Because, yes, you're in a position now where Darren McAntony came in, and it's nearly 20 years that you two have been working
saved
together.
Saved my life.
Just give us a taste of what you were, what was entailing owning this football club, and what pressure you felt under to make sure that, well, fundamentally, it functioned, it was liquid.
Well, basically, we had a board meeting one day, and the owner at the time said, I'm putting the club into liquidation. I'm fed up of funding it, ain't funding it anymore. And I said, you can't do that. I've got assets on the field. I'll take over. Well, he said to me, you ain't got any money.
Right.
So I said, no, but I've got assets. And I've got assets on the field and I've got assets. So I had all of the home in Portugal that I sold for 180 grand, put it in the club. I went home with a mortgage, second mortgage application for my wife. I said, sign that, it's 300 grand. I've sold the villa in Portugal, 180. What, we're buying a mansion? I went, no, we're buying a football club. Or putting money into a football club.
What was her reaction to that?
She said, do you know what you're doing? I said, yeah. She said, you said that, we finished up with four kids. So, but anyway, but then once I got in, it got worse. I had to take my pension out early, put it in. I had to take the deeds of my mother-in-law's house, which I bought her, give them to Barclays Bank to get an overdraft. I had a testimony against Sir Alex. He pitched his full first team down. All that money went into the club to get us through it. Big Ron manager on Sky Television.
Yes.
They come
watching that, yeah.
That was, I said, if they give me 150 grand a month, because that was the figure that I had to pay out. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning, my wife would come downstairs. What are you doing up? I said, I don't know where I'm getting the wages for this month. You know, it was real worry and an hassle. But I managed to do it for 2.5 years. I don't know how I done it. Big Ron thing helped me out a lot, because that paid 150 wages for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. Ron done after dinners, golfing days, and that done brilliant. And then, thankfully, Darren McAntony, when he lived in Spain, him and his dad was watching the programmes.
Literally watching the programmes, that's where it came
saying,
from.
That geezer needs my help. I'm going to go and buy the club off him. So he came over and...
You'd never met him before?
Never met him before. And he sent his entourage, you know, about six people come and talk to me. And and then he made me an offer. And I phoned him up and said, oh, I had to check the date of that. I thought it was April Fool's Day. So anyway, then he came over himself, said he met me and said he wanted to do business. And I said, well, he said he'd do due diligence. I said, well, give me 150 grand, non-returnable.
Yeah.
Non-returnable.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, no problem. What's the bank details? Blah, blah, blah. Then I took him from here to the training ground as we was then. And then Alfan phoned me up and he said, I've had the bank manager on. We just got 150 grand in our account. What was that for? So that was within half hour of meeting Dara. So I knew.
I showed his intent, didn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant. And then a month later, he said he'd done due diligence, cost him 84 grand. I told him warts and all, so I was right. But what he'd seen in the accounts was all this money coming in for players that I'd sold 3 or 4 years ago with appearances, promotion, international caps and things like that. So he said, I'll buy it off you for a pound as long as you stay here and do what you're doing now as director of football. So lucky me.
That's another part of what the Barry Fry legacy is, isn't it? About your ability at the art of negotiations. Yeah. How much of that is natural? How much of that is a learned skill? And I can tell by the smile on your face how much do you enjoy it.
I love bantering about.
It's called bantering about serious.
I mean, my opinion and yours differ enormously. I want 10 million, you only want to give me one. But if I finish up with 6 or 7 or 8, I'm happy with the add-ons. We get a lot like that. But I love negotiating and things like that. And I'll never forget, we bought Dwight Gale from Dagenham, 400 grand, 10 grand a month for 40 months. After 8 months, we sold him to Palace. And I met Steve Parrish in London. And he started off with 1 million, and I got up to walk out, and he said, sit down. We finished up with 6 million guaranteed and a lot of add-ons. So I went outside downstairs, phoned the chairman and said, Darragh, I got you 6 million, mate, guaranteed. Is that all?
That's not what you said. You just put a rabbit out of a hat.
So I'm delighted. We got 7.5 million in the end because he had add-ons and they sold him on and things like that. So great deals like that, but Darragh's never happy. So he drives me on, you know what me.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a few seconds, but I quickly wanted to tell you about the EFL's fantasy football game. Fantasy EFL lets you pick players from across the Championship, League One and League Two. There's unlimited transfers, it's quick and easy to play, and you can even set up mini-leagues with your mates. And with monthly prizes, it's never too late to sign up. Search Fantasy EFL in your app store and play today.
I want to show you something, because the great thing with what YouTube chucks up and TikTok and the internet means that we could see if it's evolved, the ability and the art of negotiation. But this classic clip with you just putting...
Next on his wanted list, the Wickham striker, Miguel de Souza.
Oi, how are you, mate?
All right,
hope your goals don't put us down. Hello, mate, how are
you? He's in for some hard bargaining.
Who's talking, your man?
Yeah. I think really we're looking at 850, 950 and 1050.
No, you ain't going to get that. Fucking hell, are you sure? You ain't going to get that. I'm desperate for you, but I can't go nowhere near that. First year, 550. Second year, 6. Third year, 650. Plus 10 grand for 30 goals, all competitions, each season.
Supposing you is at a survival bonus. Love that. Survival bonus. That's a new one.
Oh, love it. How much?
We've got 8 games.
Yeah. How much?
10 grand.
How much?
10.
How much?
10. It's got to be money well spent.
It is. 5. So that's your only sticking point. Done. Welcome aboard, my man.
Cheers.
Brilliant. Thanks a million. Thank you, young man.
Barry.
Sold to the fat in the blue blazer.
The good old days, David. The good old days.
I mean, the sense of theatre that is. I've watched it a few times. The little nuances of what it is. He comes into you. You're sat in the chair. You don't get up, do you? Yeah. There's a little Lino. There's a nice to meet you, young man. And it's you immediately going. Barry's dominating the situation. He knows exactly what he's going to get from it. Are you? Again, I mean, with that, any of it kind of premeditated, or do you react to what's going on in the room?
I just react as you come in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just say what I say. I get away with murder, don't I? Wrong way it continues.
Such an amazing way of doing it. And it is, as you say, the way that deals are structured, and Dara's mentioned it several times, the players, even in my era of playing against Peterborough United, you always saw players come through, and you seemingly got it more than maybe quite a few people of when you're playing here and playing well, it's mutually beneficial. Yeah. I will send you off, possibly a very rich player, because you will go and get a big move.
Yeah.
And you were more than happy with that. So absolutely. The ones that came, Craig McHale-Smith, Aaron McLean, George Boyd, I mean, that's from my era.
Yeah, yeah.
Latterly, the ones that you've seen bounce through with this
Ivan
football.
Ivan Toney, Britta Samba, Dwight Dale, Jack Murray.
Staggering names of footballers. Harrison Burroughs.
He's Ephraim Mason Clark.
Yeah.
Harrison Burroughs, Ronnie Edwards. So there's a string of them.
So is that then one of the major selling points of what Peterborough United is to players that come in and say, do a good job and we'll send you on your way?
The only thing that I can encourage you to come to Peterborough United is because of what we've done over the past 30 years.
Yeah.
Because, to be fair, the money isn't great. But we will give you the opportunity. Whatever manager we got, if you're good enough, no matter what age you are, he will play you. And the scouts fill this stadium. Yeah. You know, so you've only got to look at our record. We sell players. We have to sell players to offset our losses every year. Dara can't manage it all. He puts a few million in. And my job is to offset the losses by selling people. And we do it very, very well.
So those players that you've just mentioned that have come through Peterborough United and gone on to establish themselves at the top end of the pyramid, is there one that stands out? Could you pick a favourite, a player that's come through and done the business that you're very, very proud of?
To be honest, when I first came here 29 years ago, I'd done the same. You know, I had to ask the headmaster of Matthew Ebrington, because he was still at school, could he play at Brentford? And he gave me permission. He played at Brentford. He made his debut as a 15-year-old. And, you know, we eventually sold him to Tottenham with Simon Davies, who was
a 16-year-old.
Yeah. But Sir Alex had him up there for a week as well. But, of course, what he had in his team at that time, Sylvia Everton and Simon, but they went up there for a week. But when they come back, we sold them to Tottenham. We sold David Billington and Mark McKeever, 16, 17-year-old boys, to Sheffield Wednesday, David Pleat, who was in the Premier League because we played him in a friendly here. You know, I sold Luke Steele, our goalie, 16, 17, to Man United. So I'd sold a lot of players long before. Uh-huh. And, of course, what I'd done at Birmingham, all the players I had, you know, I sold. We made 12.5 million on the players we had there. So I've always done that. So I've always, you know.
It's been part of your job, Reema, hasn't it, all this time? Any players that got away that you were interested in that you couldn't quite persuade them to get there?
No, I think two of my most successful signings was two young lads that I signed for Birmingham City. Steve Finnan from Welling for £5 million.
For five grand.
And Andy Johnson, who I got from Bedford for nothing. And they sold them for millions and millions.
And again, you're talking about Steve Finnan, an international footballer for Liverpool and Andy
Liverpool
Johnson.
Liverpool, the career. Players as kids.
And these are players that you've seen with your own eyes and said, I want to get you into the club.
Well, Andy Johnson played for Bedford. Because I come from Bedford, I came down when I was at Birmingham and played a game, a testimonial for somebody. And Andy played for them, and we beat them 9-0. And I took him back to Birmingham and signed him. They developed him after that.
Yeah, yeah.
But he played regular in the Premier League.
What would you... Because we get a whole kind of spectrum of people watching our EFL Unfiltered, and having seen your take on it from such a long period of time, is the levels of advice that you give to a young footballer? Because what do you see? Do you see work ethic? Do you see drive, determination? Obviously, you need to be able to be technically good with the ball, but what separates that one that you go, I'll take you, to the one that you go, no, I'm okay?
David, it's all a matter of opinion, isn't it? It's just your opinion. You either fancy somebody or you don't. However, I'm a great believer at academy. I love the academy. You know, I put my house up again for £500,000 to keep the academy alive.
Yeah.
In as much as we had to have that with a partnership with the school, and that's how much I believe in the academy. And I've always, well, we've been fortunate. Dara, very backs the academy. Dan Ferguson, if you're good enough, he'll play you.
Yeah.
If you're 12, you know what I mean? So we're very fortunate to have a chairman, owner and a manager that supports the academy.
You mentioned Darren Ferguson. I mean, from the outside looking in, that's an intriguing relationship, given the kind of together, the part of the ways, the togetherness, the part of the ways. Does it ebb and it flow? Is that what it's like between you two?
I recommended, when Darren first came to the club,
yeah,
and I employed Keith Alexander because he was brilliant for me, because I never had no money and we willed and dealed. When Dara come in, he wanted something more and what have you. So I had to sack Keith and I recommended him, Darren Ferguson, to have an interview with Dara. They had an interview and he wanted to employ him straight away.
Yeah.
And they both come in the office weeks later. They sat there and they're both saying, Dara saying, right, I want back-to-back promotions. Fergie saying to him, well, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to back me for players and all that? And I fell off my chair laughing. I went, you two, you're 29, you're 30-something, you think you can get back-to-back promotions just like that? Oh, you're a couple of idiots. What did they do? They got back-to-back promotions. I mean, Darren's done over 650 games for us now, you know. This is the third trip to Wembley in this thing. We've won the other two. What a hat trick that would be for him. But not only that, we've got beat in the semi-final of the playoffs three times in the last 5 years. In the playoffs at Old Trafford, we beat Huddersfield in the playoff final. He's had five promotions, four of them with us, three of them taking us from League One to the Champ. He's helped develop all these players that we get, that we've sold for millions. There ain't a better manager in the country.
Does he get enough credit?
No.
No.
I'm amazed. I keep saying, you know, if you're an owner of a football club and you look at five promotions, three Wembley trips, two of them as winners, please God, it's hat trick of them.
Yeah.
You know, all these development of players, selling them for a million, he's the man I want. I can't believe he's still with us. I'm glad he is.
Yeah.
But I can't believe it. Yeah.
That essence of what the club means to you, but also what your family means to you. There's going to be a 10th grandchild imminently.
Yeah, today.
Today, two great grandchildren.
Two great grandchildren. I've got a team and one sub.
But are you not wheeling and dealing with them just yet, are you?
No, not yet. Yeah.
But that. What gives you the most pride? Sat here knowing what this football club means to you, or sitting surrounded by family?
I tell you what gives me the greatest pleasure nowadays is having the four youngest grandchildren for a night, a week, whatever, taking them out to the park, doing things, because I realise what I've missed with my own kids, because I was always working. But now I've got a bit more time to spend with them. And Adele, my missus, brought all my kids up. I have not got a clue, because she was completely on her own. I was out every night football. That's perhaps the reason why we're still together. I never used to see her.
Being able to cover football like we did the Premier League, it's completely unique to what we love about football in this country. Yeah, yeah. And again, that step from the Premier League, Championship, League One, League Two, where you've operated and the shoulders that you've rubbed with up and down the pyramid. And you talk about the game changing and the money changing in the game. Is it still fundamentally the same game though to you?
Yeah. Same 11 against 11, and I just enjoy every level of football, because I suppose I've been brought up with it, and you know, I spent half my time in. I've managed 1600 games.
That's just a staggering amount of games.
1600 games, but half of them's been in non-league.
Yeah.
I've done 483 here, I've done 700 and some at Barnet, but we weren't always in the Football League.
I suppose Barnet as well, when you make about ownership of...
Standard.
Was it every Friday you'd get the side coming in like the team?
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Then re-employed on a Saturday,
But they was great time, you know. I've been lucky to have characters as chairman and... You know, I'm so lucky in my life to be in football, that something that I've loved.
Could you give us a favourite moment?
too many.
Yeah.
Here now, talking to you. I'm 80, you've just reminded me. I've had two heart attacks. What the hell am I doing here? Long may it continue.
Wasting your time talking to me.
Yeah. Up the posh.
Will you ever stop, Barry
Fry? No.
I think once I stop selling players, I think the chairman will kiss me goodbye.
Really?
I understand.
Yeah.
He's been brilliant to me. Yeah. He has really saved my life, because the worry of being an owner of a football club and the responsibility of finding £150,000 a month, I'd run out of options.
Yeah.
I'd opt everything I owned, you know, and I was in a real bad, sticky spot, but lucky Basil Brush, he's got out of trouble again.
Once again. And on the beautiful sunny day at London Road, my friend, it's just been a pleasure to chat. It's been
pleasure to you. Carry on the good work. You do a great job for the AFL.
Thank you very much. I didn't ask you to say that, so that's
no, you didn't. No.
You're a star. I'll see you at Wembley.
Yeah, Wembley.